Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Today's episode, I think, is really fascinating. I spoke with Matt Solomon. He is the historic preservation officer for the city of Texarkana, Texas. And he told me about his recent efforts to research the city's historical markers and figure out which ones needed to be replaced, as well as identifying some that need to be applied for in the first place. We also spoke about the 100th anniversary of the construction of Texarkana, Texas City Hall. He's a fascinating guy. I learned a lot from this, and I think you will too. As usual, thanks for listening. Here's my conversation with Matt Solomon. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking a little time today on a hot day.
It is hot. It's getting warm out there. With the rain yesterday definitely helped a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So you are planning and project management and historic preservation officer.
That's correct.
That's a mouthful.
It is. So I generally just say I'm a project manager. And then in January, I was appointed as the historic preservation officer for the city of Texarkana, Texas.
Yeah, that's what I mostly want to talk to you about.
Yeah, that's what I'm most excited about talking about.
There's a lot of interest in local history.
There is.
In Texarkana. What are your responsibilities? So what exactly is your job?
So a lot of what I do focuses on the staff support to the Texarkana's Historic Landmark Preservation Commission.
Okay.
And so we have a president and who's Steve Thompson, and then we have a whole group of appointed folks who help vote and orchestrate some of the historic stuff within Texarkana. And when I came on, they had worked to establish it from a commission or from a committee to a commission.
Okay.
And that gives us a little more energy or backup as we're moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to take this commission and continue to move forward I'm excited about rediscovering the history of Texarkana.
What sort of things have you done so far this year?
So I'm really, really excited about some of the historic markers that we've rediscovered. I use that term because back in the 60s, there was a big effort to to mark Texarkana's history. And when I first got to the city, I wasn't really sure where I fit in. You know, like in a new job, you try to figure out, okay, what's needed? Where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with this position? You know, originally I was just a program manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to figure out where I fit in. And I really started digging into the history of Texarkana. I grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part of who I am. So I just, you know, like most people, just got on the internet and started Googling, and I ran across this particular piece of history called Trammell's Trace. Mm. And there was a book written about 2015, 16, 17 timeframe by a guy named Gary Pinkerton.
Okay.
And he's got a fantastic website which goes into the history of Trammell's Trace, and then he's even got a Google Maps overlay so you can see where Trammell's Trace comes into Texas starts in Fulton, Arkansas, and comes into Texas all the way down to Nacogdoches.
So this is some kind of trail or route?
Yeah, it is. So it's an early settler's route into Texas, and it's really well documented. Moses and Stephen F. Austin put it on their maps that they submitted to Mexico, saying how they were going to bring folks in, settlers in to their colony.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point they even bought land in what would become Miller County to kind of be the jumping off point. So you can imagine if you're a settler coming from Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, anywhere right. in the northeast of here, the biggest river you'd have to cross is the Red River.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cross the Red River. Their idea was you'd cross the Red River, you'd come to their plantation, you'd buy all the goods and staples you'd need that would get you down into Austin's colony. And so Nicholas Trammell is who the trail is named after.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally a buffalo trail slash Indian trail. And he kind of started using it. In fact, he would come across the Red River, what was then Arkansas territory, and he would smuggle horses and cattle back across into Arkansas territory from what was then Spain. So oftentimes we forget that we're also, not only are we on a state border, but we're on a historic international border. And so that trail was so well marked that Stephen F. Austin put it on his maps. Ultimately, he decided to go a little further south down to Natchitoches and Nacogdoches. But it was still a primary route for settlers from northeast of here to come into Texas and into Austin's colony and ultimately Texas. And so, in fact, on his maps, it shows about where Red River Lumber is on Highway 71. There, it comes into Texas. And, well, if I could back up a little bit, so it starts in Fulton, Arkansas, and it kind of meanders through, I-30 and 67 and then where the Flying J is, it crosses, where the Flying J, it crosses where the Flying J is, and then it heads down to roughly where Sugar Hill is and then crosses into Texas at Red River Lumber. And then it goes across Northridge Country Club and crosses Summerhill Road and then kind of meanders through by Moore's Lane all the way up until it crosses till about where the Red River Federal Credit Union is. And that new traffic circle on Gibson Road is a really good landmark because it crosses about 15 feet. Now, this is an old trail, and Gary Pinkerton did his best guesses, but it is surveyed, and so we know where those survey points are. So he just kind of connected those survey points. And then about where Pleasant Grove Road intersects with the access road there on the interstate is where it crosses down and down into Redwater and Epperson's Ferry. And so I tell you all that to say I got really interested in it. And I wanted to go find the historic marker. I found out there was a historic marker that marked where it came into Texas. So I drove out there one day. I was like, I'm going to find this historic marker. Well, lo and behold, it wasn't there. And so that really started my journey on this, on the project that I'm most excited about. And that's finding these historic markers or reordering them, recasting them and getting them put back up. And, so I started digging around a little more and it's like, okay, this historic marker, I can see on Google that it was here in 2009, but, and then the next picture in 2011, 2012 timeframe, it's not there anymore.
Wow, so and you're, the, you're doing some detective work.
Yeah, I'm doing some detective work. And there were actually three other markers that were with it. The French in Texas, the Caddo Indian Nation, and the First Disciples of Christ, which is really, as much as it is a marker for one of the early Christian churches in, in this area, it's really a Colin McKinney marker. If you know who Colin McKinney is, he was the author of the Texas Declaration of Independence. And he is one of the few people in Texas, he's the only person in Texas that has a city and a county named after him. So Texas and Collin County. But, you know, we don't do a very good job in Texarkana of claiming him because he was really here when he wrote, you know, obviously this predates the idea of Texarkana, but he was here. And I'm working to reclaim that and say, hey, you know, he was here first.
That's
he was,
really
he wasn't in McKinney, Texas, or around McKinney, Texas, when he wrote the Texas Declaration of Independence. And so I thought, well, what happened to these markers? And so I continued to do some digging and was like, okay, if we want a new ones, you know, what's the process? Got the paperwork, and but you still need money. And so I got to the point where I was ready to go ask for money. And
budget is one of the topics on my list.
And so so I reached out to Gary Pinkerton, who wrote the book, and said, hey, I'm interested in, and this marker is missing. It's gone. It was hit by, it was, I think it was hit by a truck in 2009. And he said, absolutely, I'm willing to partner with you to update the language, do that kind of stuff. And he said, you know, in fact, I think I heard that those markers were in Atlanta, Texas. About 10 years ago, I heard they were there. He said, I don't know if they're still there or not. Well, that set me off like, okay, if somebody knows that these markers survived the being hit by a truck, like let's figure it out. So I reached out to the Texas Department of Transportation, and they were extremely helpful. And so between Gary Pinkerton and who he knew that he mm-hmm. knew had saw him and the Texas Department of Transportation, lo and behold, I was able to find the four markers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
where were they?
They were down in the Atlanta, Texas Department of Transportation office.
Huh.
And they were in a one of their storage yards, just in a crate. And,
wow.
And a guy named Bob Vernon, he's a Texas archaeological steward.
Mm-hmm.
He was ultimately the guy who had saved them. About 10 years ago, he saw them in the yard, and they were getting ready to scrap them. And I'm so excited that he did that.
Yeah,
and he knew he had pictures of them from 10 years ago. And so I went,
it's
I was
just
like,
amazing what people are willing to let go of yeah. and just get rid of.
Well, you know? And so, you know, history seems to be one of those things you're either interested in it or right. you're not. And it's ever since I was little, I can remember my grandmother sitting me down and walking me through our family lineage and genealogy, and, mm-hmm. and she had all kinds of books and documents, and that just really got me excited about it.
Great. So what other markers are you searching for?
So ultimately, so we knew those four markers were missing, uh-huh. and that set me off. Okay, what other markers are missing in Texarkana? And so we ended up doing a historic marker survey, and we said, okay, what all historic markers are in Texarkana? And there's a really, really good website if anybody's interested on the Texas Historic Commission. Mm-hmm. Their website has an atlas which allows you to go across the state of Texas and look and click on the markers, read the text, read what's there. And so that's a really good point for me to start right. and say, okay, which ones are in Texarkana? And so we identified which ones were listed in Texarkana, and then we went out and said, okay, are they still there or not? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we identified, let's see here, I've got my notes, 62 historic or potentially historic sites in Texarkana.
Hmm.
Now, the reason I say potentially historic is because there was a book written, and actually Dr. Beverly Rowe updated it in 2011 timeframe,
mm-hmm.
but that book was originally written in 1980, and it had a list of historic properties in Texarkana with pictures and who mm-hmm. the architects, all a lot of really good details. And it nominated about 15 ish mm-hmm. locations, which could be applied for historic protection or historic markers. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I say potentially historic.
Right.
35 of that 62 were already registered either state or national locations. And then 29 were believed to have markers. So just because you apply to be a historic mm-hmm. site doesn't necessarily mean you pay for the marker, right? It comes back to right. cost.
So really 29 good, of those 35.
Yes. Yeah, so okay. There were 29 markers in Texarkana. 17 markers we identified as in place, and then 12 were known to be missing.
Hmm.
Of those 12, five were private property. So that's a whole nother can of worms, you know, okay,
yeah.
Do you want it? Do you want to pay for it? That kind of stuff. One marks a demolished home. So the Moore family home, which was on New Boston Road.
Hmm.
It was one of the original Texarkana pioneers, Moore's Lane.
Right,
they donated
right.
a lot of land for churches around town. So kind of try to figure out what to do with that one, but that's a whole nother can of worms, like private right. property. And then one marked a grave site. And that gentleman's name was Francis Patrick Henry.
Okay.
And he was a direct descendant of Patrick Henry of Revolutionary War fame.
Right.
In fact, when he died, the whole city of Texarkana closed down to mark to have his funeral.
What time frame was this?
Let's see here. I've got the information. So he died in 1911.
Okay.
No. He was the great-great-grandson of Patrick Henry. Served in... let's see, he was elected to the state senate in 1876 and built the first brick home in the city. Now, the address, I haven't located that yet. I'm basically just reading off what the marker said.
Yeah, yeah.
He was an attorney in Texarkana for 34 years. And again, all the businesses in Texarkana closed in respect of his death. So then it gets us to five regionally important historical markers that I thought, okay, this is something the city has some control over and can work on.
Right.
And if you remember, I've only talked about four. And I'll just quickly review them from my memory, but Caddo Nation, Trammell's Trace, French in Texas, and First Disciples of Christ. Mm-hmm. The fifth one is Wavell's Colony. And I think that's a really, really cool one for not only the Texarkana.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a really cool one for not only for Texarkana, mm-hmm. Texas, but Texarkana, Arkansas also. Because as we've talked about with Stephen F. Austin, mm-hmm. and Trammell's Trace and bringing the colonists down through what would become Texarkana to establish his colony, he's the most famous impresario for Mexico, mm-hmm. Or what was Mexico at the time, but he's not the only one. There was a dozen or so impresarios that were Anglos that were responsible for settling what would become Texas. The fifth one is Wavell's Colony. And so Arthur Wavell was a Scottish-born mercenary, for lack of a better term. So he was I get them mixed up a little bit in my memory, but it's either the Chilean or the Peruvian army. He was a general.
Interesting.
And then he got assigned to Mexico and was representing that country as a general in Mexico, as a liaison. And he got to know Moses and Stephen F. Austin. And he also at that time said, hey, I kind of like this Mexican thing better. So he actually changed his allegiance, became a Mexican general. And then in this discussion with Stephen F. Austin and Moses Austin, he said, hey, I kind of like this impresario thing a little better. You know, he kind of fits the definition of a mercenary really well, because he just changes his allegiance when he wants to.
Right.
And so he said, I like this impresario thing. And so him and Stephen F. Austin got to be friends. And he said, I'll go back to Great Britain. I'll go back to England and recruit settlers for you. So he got on a ship with $1,700, which back then was a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, and a whole bunch of paperwork.
Like the 1820s or so?
Yeah, it would have been 1820s.
Yeah.
And he, unfortunately, his ship got pirated on the way. So he got to England and had no money, no documents. And they actually have these letters. Stephen F. Austin and Arthur Wavell exchanged a series of letters back and forth, and they actually have these letters. I think they're in the University of Texas Library down in Austin. Mm-hmm. They have the letters talking about, hey, I got here, I have no money, but I'm still willing to work with you. I like this idea.
Yeah.
And so for a few years goes by, and he says, you know, I'm working for Stephen F. Austin right now, but I think I want to be my own impresario.
Right.
Like, this is a pretty good deal. Like, I bring settlers, I get money, I get land. And so he, against the better wishes of Stephen F. Austin, because if you remember, if you know much about Texas history, Stephen F. Austin, you know, went to prison in Mexico. He was fairly frustrated because the Mexicans thought, you know, hey, this isn't going well for us.
Right.
And so Stephen F. Austin expressed frustration to him and said, hey, I don't know that I'm going to make any money on this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be a successful venture, and I don't recommend that you follow in my footsteps. But Arthur Wavell, a man of his own interests, said, I'm going to do it myself. So he applied to be an impresario and was awarded what would become Red River County, Bowie County, and Miller County.
Huh.
Because if you think about the international border at that time between Mexico and the United States, it was a lat long, you had to use the stars at that time to determine where state line was.
Yeah.
You know, now we're spoiled. We can, the road is the delineation between Texas and Arkansas. But in the 1820s, there was no road there. And so, if you think about how early maps were made, the best international borders were oftentimes mountains or rivers.
Right.
And so they just said, hey, Mexico said, hey, the Red River is really our border with Arkansas Territory, the United States. So we're going to use the Red River, and we're going to, they gave Arthur Wavell responsibility for Red River County, Bowie County, and Miller County. And so that's a really cool connection between what's now the states of Arkansas and Texas.
Yeah. So what became of his colonies?
So there, shortly thereafter, after he got the application, so he never actually visited his colony. He got a list of settlers, and there is a list of settlers that's in the historical records that talks about some of the early influential families in Texarkana, or at least the area. Mm-hmm. So he never visited. He attempted to, but weather and all kinds of things prevented him from it. And so he died in England, having never visited his colony. And the reason his colony kind of died is just a few years later, Texas declared its independence from Mexico. So now there's no impresarios. And he made petitions to the Republic of Texas to try to get payment for, and I think he got a little bit, but not much, not near what he was hoping. And another interesting fact about Arthur Wavell, so if you go and Google Arthur Wavell, you will be inundated with information on his family, because his great-grandson or grandson became a field marshal in World War II and was responsible for all of North Africa.
Oh, wow.
And so the Wavell family has continued in England and continued to be successful. An interesting point with all that is, and I talked about some of the documents that they have about Wavell, that marker was in front of the old Howard Johnson at I-30 and 71. So not the new one that you see now, but it's since demolished. And so that's about that time is when it was reported stolen in 2015. So you can imagine this marker sat in front of a hotel. The hotel was demolished, and the marker just disappeared and was reported stolen in 2015. But when they opened that hotel in the 60s, there was a big to-do about this marker being in front of the hotel. And there was a room. So think about hotel rooms now and even back in the 60s. Yeah. They generally have a conference room where people can come and meet.
Right, right.
And that room was called the Wavell Conference Room. And in that room, it had all kinds of I'm sure there were copies of a lot of the documents and family history and stuff. And they actually sent an invitation over to Wavell's descendants in England to come. I don't see any evidence that they made it.
Yeah.
But back in the 60s, they were thinking about this kind of stuff.
That's really interesting.
Now, I don't know what happened to all the documents that were in that room. You know, it's unfortunate that they're lost to history.
Yeah.
And with the marker. But the good news is I have a copy of the original marker application with all kinds of stuff. I've talked to the Texas Historic Commission about ordering a new marker, and they said, hey, the process is really easy. You want a new one? We've got all the information. You're already approved, so we just need the money. And
how much does it cost?
For a new marker, back in it cost about $2,000 for the size of marker that it was.
Yeah. And it's cast out of what, steel?
Aluminum.
Aluminum.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And so we've talked a little bit about the markers and the locations on the highway and at a demolished hotel. You know, we have a fantastic gift here in Texarkana with the post office.
And
I don't know. I think you're aware. I've at least seen recent posts about it. It seems to be more popular now. But the post office, the federal courthouse, is the second most photographed federal courthouse in the country.
Right.
Second only to, can you guess?
Supreme Court.
That's right.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. So it's a really cool tourist diamond jewel that we have here for Texarkana. And that, people pull off the interstate and say, I want to take what is there to do in Texarkana?
Right.
And they want to take a picture on the state line. Yeah. That's a really cool attraction for the city. But they stand there, and I'll walk around during lunch and walk around downtown and talk to people. And they stand at the courthouse, and they take the picture, and they go, what else is there around here? Because unfortunately, and I've recently read an article from Dr. Rowe about this, but Texarkana doesn't have a typical courthouse square.
Right.
And so, think about other small towns in Texas. You can stand in the square, and you can see shops and restaurants and stuff like that, but you stand in front of the post office courthouse, and you can't really see the really good stuff about Texarkana.
Yeah.
So what I'm proposing, and actually what the commission just voted on approved on Tuesday was that we get these five markers recast if in need be. So we're going to have to get four recasts. So Francis, Mary, and Henry, because that was stolen. Wavell's Colony was stolen. Trammell's Trace, with all the new research that's been done, I've worked with Gary Pinkerton. We've got some proposed new language that we're going to send over to Texas Historic Commission to see about, or to get a new marker for Trammell's Trace, because it's slightly damaged, but now is an opportunity to kind of revisit the language. And then the same thing for the Caddo Indians. The First Disciples of Christ and the French in Texas, I've had that language validated, and those signs are in relatively good shape. And so two of them we're going to be able to put back up almost immediately. We've got to do some maintenance on the poles that when they were cut off, they were a little bit too short. But I think we've got enough material with the markers that we're going to replace that should be low to no cost. But we've got to get the three replaced or four replaced. But once we get that done, what I've proposed, and as I said, they approved it, was to put these markers at the post office and at the regional Museum of Regional History. And so that, I think, will just be a fantastic thing to tell people about our community. And I see it only as a start. I've got another project that we can talk about where we get some new, where we petition to get some new markers. But I'm really excited about that.
So instead of at the actual sites, they would all be downtown?
Well, so the Caddo...
Or what you're talking about,
so the Caddo Indian one, and you bring up a good point. Like, another project that I have in the back of my mind is I want to mark Trammell's Trace all the way through Texarkana.
Yeah,
so you can see, so you can stand on the road. I mean, there's schools that are close to that. It'd be a great educational piece for kids. You know, landowners can say, hey, you know, my house in some cases is right on Trammell's Trace. How neat would that be?
Yeah.
But I want to own that. I theorize, I don't have any evidence that supports this, but I think Texarkana, the city, actually more of the trace goes through Texarkana than any other city in Texas.
Right.
Nacogdoches recently made a granite marker. But the granite marker is in a cemetery. And so they own as much as the trace as we do.
Right.
And I want Texarkana to really grab a hold of that. And so I can just envision, you know, either some type of marker or one thing that I get excited about is, have you ever gone into a high school football stadium and they have the paw prints or the hoof prints or whatever that lead into the stadium, you're in our territory.
Yeah.
How cool would it be to have that, like hoof prints or buffalo prints or something like that, that kind of crosses the streets, if you will. I don't know that that'll get approved, but I'm excited about proposing it
and
seeing if we can figure that out. But back to the locations. So Trammell's Trace is really the only one that has a specific location.
Right.
The Colin McKinney does have a home site. It's privately owned, and this is more as it's a First Disciples of Christ marker, which doesn't really have a location where they were kind of a home church, if you will. They just kind of visited around. And then the Caddo Indian one, there's a specific reason why they don't want to mark the site.
Yeah.
Because people go in, grave rob and stuff like that. And unfortunately, that's happened more times than historians can count.
Right.
And then the French in Texas is more of a regional marker anyway. So, and then same thing for Wavell's Colony. It's more of a regional marker anyway. So the locations don't matter as much.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in some cases, they don't want to mark the exact location.
So what are the new markers you're thinking about?
Wow. So I have proposed a partnership with Texas A&M Texarkana.
Mm-hmm.
I was a history, I majored in history from Texas A&M in College Station.
Mm-hmm.
I majored in history because I was going to be an Army officer. I recently retired a few years ago, but I used to watch the History Channel and say I was studying.
Right.
But, you know, as a history, as a student of history, or, you know, if you've ever taken a history class, whether it's the social studies or whatever, you write a paper, you turn it in, you get a grade, and then you like, okay, brain dump them onto the next thing.
Right.
But how cool would it be to write a paper that generates an application that and then produces a marker?
Yeah.
That way in 30 years, you can come back and say, I did the research for that marker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've proposed that with Texas A&M Texarkana, and Dr. Nakashian and Dr. Sykes are really excited about it. And so what we're working through is a program that a history student or a government student or a political science student mm-hmm. could specifically do a project. And I recently went and judged some student projects that produced it was a poster contest, I think, if memory serves correct. But they would present, they do research on a topic,
mm-hmm.
do a poster, and then talk about it. Well, you know, that fits perfectly with the historic marker. What if that just generated a marker?
Right.
And so they're excited about it. I'm excited about it. And that will, if what I've found out so far is correct, then the last marker that was put here in Texarkana was from 1981. And in fact, that was the Caddo Indian marker. Mm. So that's like 50 years of history that's now become available to put a marker. So for a person,
Ross Perot.
Well, yes, exactly. So I've got a list here of folks that I've done some research on, just cursory research, and say, hey, who are the famous people from Texarkana? And Ross Perot's on the list. Unfortunately, he's not eligible. He died in 2019, mm-hmm. and in order for a person to be eligible, they have to have been dead for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So he'll be available for us to do in 2029, but start this program, you know, he is an excellent candidate as we get it rolling.
Yeah.
But Morris Shepherd is another good one. You know, he wrote a constitutional amendment.
Right. Prohibition.
That's right. And so I laugh because I talked to some of the leaders within City Hall, and they're like, well, I don't know if we want to own that we started Prohibition. But if you think about it, I mean, you know, we've got the Budweiser Clydesdales mural outside. If it wasn't for Morris Shepherd and Prohibition, those Clydesdales wouldn't be the representative of Budweiser, because those were a gift to the Bush family, or to Anheuser and the Bush family, mm-hmm. to mark the end of Prohibition. So, you know, so Texarkana can really own. Yeah, hey, you wouldn't have the Clydesdales
right.
if it wasn't for Texarkana.
And that's, it just says a lot about the culture here,
yeah.
too, you know,
yeah.
that it sprang up from yeah. there in a way.
Yeah. Some other good ones are Durwood Merrill. You know, a Major League Baseball umpire who's mm-hmm. in the, I think he's in Cooperstown. If he's not, he probably should be, but yeah, at least his picture's in there.
That's the only umpire's name I know.
Yeah. And then Wright Patman, U.S. mm-hmm. Congressman, Corinne Griffin, who's on the side of TLC. You know, uh-huh. she, during silent picture, she was the big deal.
Yeah.
And it would be really cool to have a marker that now explains how you have a mural, because as great as that mural is, mm-hmm. you might just think it was a Dr. Pepper mural and not know that it was Corinne Griffin. Dorothea Church. So Dorothea Church was from Texarkana, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first African American model in Paris. She and I'm as a guy, I'm going to mess this designer's name up, but Christian Dior.
Yeah.
Yeah. She modeled for him, and so how cool is it?
Yeah,
and how inspirational it is to kids from all different types of backgrounds in Texarkana. Hey, yeah. if you're interested in fashion, there is people that have come before you that have shown the light, and Dorothea Church is a really good example of that. Now, what's really cool about Dorothea Church is her sister, and her name escapes me right now, but her sister was an accomplished pianist. And so as you think about these, a marker program on the Texas side, you know, how cool would it be to have a Dorothea Church, Texarkana, Texas marker? Arkansas has better claim to her sister.
Right.
So now we could have a family of markers that, you know,
sister markers for sister cities.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Albert Prince Marshall. He was a librarian recognized as one of the top four NAACP librarians during the Civil Rights Movement.
Huh.
And so that's another one that I think could really do a lot to inspire kids from all different backgrounds here in Texarkana. And then there's three others that are nationally registered but don't have markers.
Okay.
So that's Texarkana Junior College. Unfortunately, that building is gone, but there's a new school there now, and I think is an excellent candidate to just request a marker be produced for it.
Yeah.
Union Station, a nationally registered property that doesn't have a marker. And as we move forward with whatever Union Station is going to be, you know, we need to have a place that, a way to tell people about it. And the marker program is a really good one for that. And then the Grimm Hotel, mm-hmm. Another really cool property in Texarkana that has been reinvigorated.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about when that thing opens up because it's going to change downtown Texarkana for the better, I hope. But you, when you have 90 plus people that move
right.
in. So right now, with the exception of Berman Farr, which is kind of on the outskirts of Texarkana, you know, there's not a large population that live in downtown. Well, when that place opens up, it's gonna
make a big difference.
Make a big difference. And that one doesn't, it's a nationally registered, but it doesn't have a marker. And so that's my cursory list of new potential markers.
Interesting. So, what else are you working on besides these historic markers?
So the historic markers, and I had something, what was the other thing? Oh, so the 100th anniversary of City Hall. So that's another really good one that we're getting ready for. We have a committee that's working on the plan for that, what it's going to look like. I'm responsible for the research of that. And if you noticed on Facebook, I think we've updated the times of that a little bit. Originally, when we started this project, all we had to go off of was the original blueprints that I have in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And they were approved in June of 1924. So that's right. The only date that we had to go off of. As I started digging into it and working with the museum, I actually found an application for a book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the application is dated 1981. And it goes into really, really good detail about City Hall on the Texas side being built,
mm-hmm.
and all the events that are associated with it. And so the applications for a book in 1981, the book was then published in 1984. And so that led me to believe, okay, let's go find the book. So I've got the book here in front of me, and I can turn to the page that it has Texarkana, Texas City Hall, and it gives a paragraph, not much detail, but a paragraph, like just like it does for the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a picture of the stairwell, if you've been in City Hall on Texas side, that stairwell is just absolutely beautiful.
I've walked up it many times.
Yeah. But what's really cool about the book is we are one of four city halls in Texas that are in the book. And there are about 180 city halls that are in this book. The name of the book is America's City Halls, and it was published in 1984.
Interesting.
And that
building has always been the municipal building. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Now, it's had additional duties, if you will.
Yeah.
It was originally contained two courtrooms.
Okay.
So a larger courtroom, if you envision the city council chambers,
mm-hmm.
that room was originally a two-story room.
Mm.
And it had a balcony up top, and that was the large courtroom.
Okay.
And then there was an appellate court up on the fourth floor.
Interesting.
So it's gone through some minor changes in history, but it's relatively, I mean, if you look back through pictures of it, it hasn't changed that much, which is really cool. So application, book. Now it moves us to dates as we get into more of that informed our decision-making on how and when we're going to celebrate the City Hall's 100th anniversary. So in 1923, they went out to the people and said, okay, we're thinking about building a new City Hall. By the way, there was already a City Hall at that location. There was a City Hall, which if you think about dividing that building in half,
mm-hmm.
the City Hall was about half that size.
Yeah.
And then next to it, there was an opera. And
okay.
There was 11 opera houses in Texarkana at the time.
Wow.
And so there was a whole bunch. Imagine, and we're lucky that we still have one standing with the Pro.
Yeah.
So bids went out. So they got $200,000 in bonds in 1923. Bids went out for to look for architects and construction expertise. July 1923, the first blueprints. The blueprints were produced on 24 June 1924, which gets us to a 2024 date. So the blueprints are now over 100 years old by a couple of days. Building was built, and the first city council meeting was held there the 1st of September 1925.
Okay.
And at that city council meeting, they were thinking about how do we open this building up to the public to have a open house or celebrate the building being built. And so they identified 12 November 1925 as the date they wanted to celebrate the opening of City Hall. They chose that date because it was also the date of a congressional politicians, et cetera, conference here in Texarkana. Oh, okay. For all of Texas.
So
there was going to be all kinds of dignitaries here.
Right.
And so, hey, they're going to be here. We'll celebrate the opening of City Hall. And what's really cool is in the application, they included some of the newspaper clippings from 12 November 1925, and it talked about all the people that were here. They had a parade. They worked with a number of civic organizations to have the event. The mayor and council members from Texarkana, Arkansas, were led by the fire department with the band over to the Texas side celebrate. And so they went all out. They had a private party at the Grimm and then came back to City Hall, and it was actually open till like 11 o'clock at night for people to come and see it.
That's cool.
So in the newspaper article again, it talks about a painting that they unveiled at this ceremony. And the gentleman's name is Judge John King. And in fact, King's Highway is named after John King, Judge John King. And I got to wondering what happened to that painting. Like, it was such a big deal. Like, where did it go? And so I started doing a little digging. I reached out to the museum. I said, hey, I don't know what this guy looks like. I don't know anything, but there was a painting that was unveiled at the event. They made a big deal out of it. In fact, it hung in the courtroom for who knows how long. I asked the museum, is it possible that you have it? And they said, well, let us look. And I really didn't think we were going to find it. But lo and behold, in their storage rooms, they found the painting.
Wow.
And I've since validated that it's him. So it's not a name. It doesn't have a name written under it that says who it is.
Yeah.
But I've since validated that's who it is because there was a book that was written in 1933 about the history of Texarkana, Miller, and Bowie counties. And in that book, they have the painting. And talk about, you know, that this painting was unveiled when City Hall opened. Now, the painting is a little bit damaged. It's been in storage for some time. And so we're working right now to gather some funds and identify a curator or a conservatory that can help us fix it. But I'm really excited about unveiling that painting
again.
On the 100th anniversary of the opening.
Right.
We're going to celebrate a series of the events that I've run through already. But we're looking to have a celebration on or about the 12th of November, 2025. And hopefully we'll unveil a marker to designate the building as a historic site in the state of Texas and nationally, but we'll also be able to unveil the painting again and say, hey, you know, this was John King, you know, we're rediscovering his contributions to Texarkana.
That's really cool.
And so that led me to, I've told this long story to get to another project that I'm working on. If you've been in City Hall, they have three stairway landings as you're going up. You know, you walk halfway and then you go the other way. And those are kind of empty. I think they're a perfect blank canvas for a lot of the art and Texarkana history that they have in the museum. Now, I'm not trying to take exhibits from the museum, but they have stuff in storage that they just can't display because they're limited in space. And how neat would it be to, on some of those blank walls, put black and white photos or the portrait of John King, other art that citizens of Texarkana have made and donated to City Hall. And that way, you know, as you're walking up the stairs, you can, you know, go back in time in Texarkana and see, you know, what it used to look like, because there are some fantastic images of what Texarkana, the energy that was here in Texarkana.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see the energy now, but get excited about the future, which takes me to another project that was really the first project that I worked on when I was here.
Yeah.
I got here and talked about, you know, getting started, and was looking through the history again, and you see the energy with the buildings being refurbished downtown, but couldn't really get a feel for what Texarkana wanted to look like in the future. Certainly there are 4 and 5 inch thick plans that are, that we're working through as city staff, but you know, how do you, what's that look like? Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, what if we had an artist draw what Texarkana could look like? And then somebody else said, well, what if we had, you know, citizens of Texarkana tell us? And so that's even a better idea. So we went out to the community and did the Design Downtown art contest.
Right.
And we got some fantastic renderings or ideas of what they want, what the citizens wanted downtown Texarkana to look like. And I'm really excited that those are now framed in City Hall. And that was really my first contribution to, now all the city staff can walk by there. Hopefully they get inspired and really think about, you know, what they're doing now and what we're hoping to achieve in the future.
That sounds great. Well, we could talk about all this forever.
I know. I get on my soapbox. I apologize.
Well, it sounds like you're exactly the right person for the job. So that's great. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to me. Stay in touch, because you know, these stories, people love them, and for good reason. It's great to know your own history.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really excited about rediscovering Texarkana and then communicating to not only our citizens but the nation about what the great jewel we have here.
And people can find you at City Hall if they have some something to
talk about. I'm on the fourth floor of City Hall on the planning community development side. And I've already had a couple people reach out and say, hey, we want to do a marker for a church or something else. And so I'm excited to see where we can go with the rediscovering and advertising the history of Texarkana.
That's great. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Follow On the Line on our website, texarkanagazette.com/podcast. To support the show, post a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. And please, spread the word by sharing a link or telling a friend. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I'll see you next time on The Line.